Well, welcome everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. And welcome to the Review of All Rights Protection Mechanisms Subteam for Data call on the 17th of November, 1700 UTC. On the call today, we do have J. Scott Evans, Rebecca Tush, Philip Corwin, Susan Payne, Michael Graham, Kurt Pritz. We do have apologies from Kathy Kleinman and Lori Schulman. From staff, we have Barry Wong, Julie Headland, Barry Cobb, Ariel Liang, and myself, Michelle DeSnyder. As a reminder, please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please utilize your mute button when not speaking. And I'll turn the meeting back over to you, Mary.
Thank you very much, Michelle, and this is Mary from staff. Not to chair the meeting, but to note that with this subteam, the decision was not to have a chair of the whole subteam, but for folks to take on duties as and when depending on their specific responsibilities. And for today, if you note the agenda on the right-hand side pod, the main focus is the discussion of the Google document on which I believe most, if not all, of the entries have been filled up by various people. I note also that we have two of the three working group subchairs on here who are ex officio to the subteam. We have J. Scott Evans and Phil Corwin. So my purpose here is just to kick everyone off. And I see that Ariel has put a link to the current version of the Google Doc in the chat, and we also have a PDF version of the document that we can upload for everyone. I'm happy then to just turn the call over to the subteam, and perhaps, Christine, you did have a comment before we start on the document?
Hi, thanks. Yes, I have a suggestion, a.k.a. volunteer. I was given our discussion that we were going to break this up and each sort of take a section. The section that I sort of put the initial draft in for is the first section. So if without, unless someone disagrees, I am going to volunteer to chair today with the suggestion that whoever wrote up section two chair next time, assuming we get through section one this time. I don't know if that's sort of what we were thinking when we originally set this plan up. And I'm certainly happy to step down if someone was chomping at the bit to chair today, but I'm certainly willing to take us through my answers and the things that I put in the chat. Thanks.
Hi, Christine. This is Mary from staff. Thank you so much. I see that Susan and Kurt are agreeing for you to chair today, and especially seeing that you did section one. I don't see any other indications or objections, and Lori's agreed as well, and J. Scott has too. So let's please go ahead, and Christine, I will happily hand over the call to you. Thank you so much.
Great, thanks. This is Christine for the record, and I note that the chart is up in the Adobe chat. I've also opened it on my screen so I can scroll through better and maybe take some notes as we go. But starting out with my understanding of what it is we were supposed to do here is that we were supposed to take a look at the types of questions that we wanted to send to registry operators. That was the section I was tasked with. So the way I went about it was to really think about what could guide the winner of the RFP, so whoever is going to be gathering this data. And so to some, in some places, I got kind of specific with sort of suggested questions that I was hoping would guide them without being, the goal was not to sort of dictate to them what the question should be, but to suggest to them what a type of question might be that could possibly get to the answer that we're looking for. So I'll just dive right into my suggestions, and then hopefully we have a robust conversation, you know, and we can really fly through this quickly and decide what parts of my work is good and what parts of my work need some editing. So with respect to the first piece, we wanted to obtain anecdotal evidence to facilitate working group review of Sunrise Charter question number two, which was relating to whether Sunrise and or premium pricing affects trademark holders' ability to participate in Sunrise. And a couple of our charter questions were related to this purpose. One is, does the Registry Sunrise or premium name pricing practices unfairly limit the ability of trademark owners to participate during Sunrise? And then if so, how extensive is the problem? So trying to get at this question of the pricing practices of registry operators, I noted that I didn't think that this question really went to registry operators. I had made that point before I lost. I'm not re-litigating that battle. So what I ended up doing was suggesting some questions that might get us some complementary information, because I don't think you can ask registry operators, is your pricing scheme unfair? I mean, that's just not going to come up with an answer. So some of the questions that I came up with that sort of might help the working group come to its own understanding of that question were, how do you view the sunrise period as providing a valuable service? Which gets really to sort of the intent of registry operators, and it would maybe be sort of an open-ended, lead into an open-ended question that would talk a little bit about the types of things that were of value to registry operators. Was Sunrise participation something that you encouraged? If so, what practices and policies did you implement to encourage Sunrise registrations? If not, do you have suggestions for other policies that would have better protected brand owners' rights in your TLDs? And then again, you know, trying to get to the complaints and the unfair limitations, did you receive complaints from brand owners about your pricing, including premium pricing that applied during Sunrise? If so, can you share any steps you took to resolve the complaint? So please offer your feedback here. I'm looking for some hands, anything. Surely you don't love this. It looks like Lori agrees with the tone of the registry questions. Does anybody see any problems with the way I've worded them? Does anybody think that we can get more information from registries? Michael, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just looking word-wise, and I think your point is well taken up front, that the question really is directed at a different constituency, is subjective in that way. So I sort of like the way that you're coming at it. I think a couple of wordsmithing things. One, under your bullet, was Sunrise participation something that you encourage? One, two, I guess the end of the second sub-bullet, where you've asked, if no, do you have suggestions for other policies that would have better protected brand owners' rights in their TLDs? I would simply add after that, what are they? I read these questions rather literally, and I would say yes or no, and maybe not go any further. So this way, you know, we can certainly signal that we want to get more information. And then in the last one, I did have a comment. Hang on. I understand your phrasing where you say, if so, can you share? I think I would make that more suggestive of, if so, please share any steps that you took to resolve the complaint, and advise whether or not they were successfully received. I don't know what that wording would be. But otherwise, I think it's the right way to try and get at this information.
Thanks, Michael. Susan, you're next.
Thank you. Hi, Susan Payne for the recording. Thanks so much, Christine. A point of detail on the bullet that we were just talking about, the one about did you receive any complaints? If we take the kind of literal approach from Michael, and I recognize that obviously these aren't the final forms of the questions, but I mean, I suppose it is entirely possible that the complaint wouldn't come from the brand owner. So it might be helpful to say complaints on behalf of brand owners or from brand owners or registrars on their behalf without wanting to get into a level of detail. But I think it's conceivable that someone might choose to read this entirely literally and answer no, even though, strictly speaking, they did get complaints. So I think that, as I say, that's quite a sort of level of detail, and maybe we don't need to get into that level of detail here. But I did wonder about, I mean, we've talked at length about whether we think registry operators will provide their pricing, and I know many of us think they won't. And indeed, I'm one of them who thinks that generally speaking, probably registry operators won't be willing to share their pricing. But they clearly won't share it if we don't ask them. And so I wonder, given that we are going down this exercise and we are asking them some questions, is there any harm in saying, you know, are you willing to provide, you know, the details of your standard Sunrise pricing compared to your GA price, even if they don't provide the specific, you know, values? You know, what is the level of your standard Sunrise pricing, you know, compared to your standard GA? And indeed, are they willing to share their premium pricing? Again, I've got no real expectation that they will, but we definitely won't get the information if we don't ask.
Thanks, Susan. I also put a note in the chat that I'm actually making these edits real time to the Google Doc as we're discussing them, and we can feel free to add and delete those as we go. Let's see, Rebecca, you're next.
Hi, Rebecca Tashnet. So actually, I wanted to suggest a somewhat broader change to the Sunrise participation question. So right now, it's not reciprocal. So was Sunrise participation something that you encouraged? If yes, what did you do? If no, why not? Why not? That is, the no also encodes basically another question, which is, you know, do you have suggestions? And here I would actually ask if we should make it a little more balanced by including a reference to balance. So to say, you know, do you have suggestions for other policies that would have made Sunrise more effective, more balanced, or some other formulation, you know, and then what are they? And even, you know, why do you suggest this?
Okay, thanks, Rebecca. I see Phil is next, and then I'll put myself in the queue. Thanks. Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, thanks, Phil, for the record, and thanks for doing the it's clearly you did a great deal of work here. I just had a question at the top of page 3 of the document that's being displayed. The first two bullet points, should domain names on the reserve list that match entries in the TMCH be offered first to brand owners? And then alternatively, should ROs notify brand owners when a reserve name matching a TMCH entry is sold to a third party? How would they know if it's in the TMCH, given all the discussion we've had about the confidentiality of that database, unless they've done a massive reverse engineering job to try to find out what's in there? How would a registry operator know what's on the what's been registered in the clearinghouse?
Thanks, Phil. Could you stay on the line for just 1 minute? I'm not following which section you're in. Are you in the second row?
I'm looking at the document on the screen in the,
okay,
in the final row. That's the new language, right?
The can ask but likely won't get answered. Did you receive any complaints from brand owners about your Sunrise pricing? That
no, I'm looking at the top of page 3 of this document.
Oh, okay. We're still on page 1, top of page 2. So thanks. Okay, you'll be first in the queue when we get to the second row.
Yeah, let's mark my question for when we get there. Sorry for jumping ahead, but I was just doing a quick scan, and that one caught my interest. So I'll recede here, and when we get to that page and that column, we can take it up. But the question, let's just bookmark it right now. Okay?
Perfect. Thanks, Phil. Myself, I'm in the queue next, and then I think, unless Rebecca, that's a new hand, I think I see Susan next. My response, I guess, the intervention I wanted to make was with respect to Rebecca's suggestion to use more balanced language when talking about what registry owners might have done. And I wanted to just react to that because I did consider having some language, you know, talking a little bit about balance. However, you know, it's been pretty clear from sort of the mandate of the review is the purpose of the rights protection mechanisms were to protect trademark rights. And so, you know, if we want to talk about, you know, why you did or didn't participate in Sunrise, I feel like you're going to sort of the core of the question by saying, if you didn't participate, is it because you didn't think it was protecting trademark holders properly, or you think it protected them, you know, did give them too much protection? So that was sort of the reason I worded it that way. I'm trying to make sure that we keep the scope appropriate rather than, you know, protecting some other form of rights that's not just trademark rights. And I feel free to you know, rebut me there. Susan, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Christine. Yes, I put my hand up to respond to Rebecca as well. And I would agree with what you've just said. And also I think, you know, this is the set of questions that we're asking the registry operators, and I recognize them all sorts of things about what do you think. But we are, you know, this is supposed to be, a data gathering exercise. I recognize some of it's going to be anecdotal, but once we get into the, you know, the how would you have done it differently, I mean, that's almost what registry operators should be participating in this working group for. That's not really, data that we're going to gather to support our work. Having said which, that kind of question is almost certainly going to be the kind of question that we are asking the what's being termed the potential registrant or the other domain registrants. And they may well have views on how this could have been a more balanced process for them. But I think... I'm coming at this from the same sort of perspective as you were, that I think what we're trying to elicit here is about what, you know, why have trademark owners participated or not participated if they haven't. You know, there's been this perception that pricing is an issue, and so that's what we're asking questions about here. We're not asking about all sorts of other reasons around the edges which may or may not be relevant to balance on this particular question.
Thanks, Susan. I note that Rebecca is also modifying the doc real time, and she's suggested maybe something like made Sunrise more effective or increased utilization of Sunrise. So it looks like she's putting some suggested language in there as well that we can circulate. Kurt, go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Well, I hope this is helpful. I wonder if we could ask a question about the registry's strategy with regard to Sunrise, and, you know, they might choose not to answer this one too, but, you know, is there a strategy for Sunrise to get a lot of Sunrise registrations? And then if so, is it to make money, or is it to, you know, be establish a reputation as a, you know, rights protection mechanism champion? Was their strategy to sort of discourage Sunrise registrations? And if so, how did they do that? Did they not market a Sunrise period at all? Did they go for just a 30-day period? Did they charge high prices? So I wonder if we could ask them what their strategy was and then take from that, make some extrapolation from there to whether judgment as to whether this particular rights protection mechanism is reaching some of its goals.
Thanks, Kurt. I added a line onto the bullet two about Sunrise participation being something you encouraged, something to the effect of, was it part of your overall strategy or how did you market it, that sort of thing. I chuckled a little bit because, you know, obviously registry operators are forced to do a Sunrise. So as far as your strategy, well, given it's what I've got, this is what I guess I'll use it for. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. I just wanted to perhaps respond to one of the points that Rebecca makes in the side, which is a suggestion maybe changing the language, which presently is better protected brand owners' rights in your TLDs. The suggestion maybe that she was making made Sunrise more effective or increased utilization of Sunrise. I think the problem I have with that is what is meant by made Sunrise more effective. I mean, on the one side, for rights owners, it's protection. For registries, that might be, you know, to create the least amount of problem. And I think, as Susan and you had pointed out, we already have the directed question as to whether or not the RPMs were effective in doing what they were intended to do, which was to protect the brand owner's rights. So I think, you know, we might want to ask a question of the registries about effectiveness in their view and what they meant by that. But I think having these really focused questions is far better and probably more likely to get information, whether it be data or anecdotal, but information that we can utilize as data when we go back and then make our final determination as a PDP. Thanks.
Thanks, Michael. Kurt, are you back in the queue? Nope, old hand. Okay. All right. I'm going to allow you to pause for 30 seconds here while you think about the interventions that we've made so far, the suggestions we've made so far. And if hearing no additional comments to number one. Oh, Jay Scott, go ahead.
Hi there. Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Great. Thanks.
I suppose overall, these are personal comments, not chair comments. This is Jay Scott Evans for the record. Where I'm struggling is how asking these questions gets to the root of what our charter is, which is the effectiveness of RPMs. I mean, it seems to me that getting objective data would be far easier to do and then let the data speak for itself, such as, did you have premium pricing? Did you, you know, if so, please, you know, how did that work or something like that so we can look. And then how many Sunrise registrations did you process during your Sunrise period? And then if we ask 50 registries this question and we see that those that ran premium pricing had lower number of Sunrise registrations, I think it shows that there was an effect. But I just am curious as how this has to do with the effectiveness of Sunrise registrations. I guess maybe the point that some trademark owners are feeling is by using premium pricing, and I'm extrapolating here, no one's called me and complained to me personally, you lessened the effectiveness because you lessened its attractiveness to me as a solution to the problem, because now it was priced out of my range of available remedies. But I just am a little worried about asking all these questions, like, what did you do to encourage it, and what did you do not to encourage it, and if so, why? I don't know if any of that has to do with the effectiveness of the RPM, but maybe you all have been, you know, dealing with these issues and sort of discussing them longer than I have. I've missed a couple of calls, but I just struggle with the fundamental purpose of what we're trying to do, and that is to address whether the RPMs as they exist today are performing as they were designed. If not, what are our recommendations to cure that problem? So I just put that out.
Thanks, Jay Scott. And I may just respond quickly to the question about why they're worded this way, and then Michael will be next. The main reason, and I'm not even really defending it because I don't really like these questions at all, the main reason I asked the questions the way I did is only because I was trying to answer questions that would actually result in an answer from registry operators, involving trying to get their buy-in and get, you know, some feedback on how the process worked for them, because, you know, it really asks registry operators, were you unfair? I absolutely agree. I've included those data questions in the list now. This is great. I think we have to distinguish between premium pricing and premium pricing as it overlaps with Sunrise pricing, because you can absolutely have a ton of premium pricing, but if you've carefully vetted that against sort of a TMCA list or something, then that's a different answer than if you just talk about premium pricing. So I'm going to make a little tweak there, and maybe we'll circulate that and see if you like that edit. But this is exactly what I was hoping for, is people to come back with suggestions of maybe more comprehensive hard data that we could request. And I am not married to these questions. If the group decides we want to delete them, we should delete them. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, I'll see which of these 2 points I forget first. The first one, in that sub button where you ask, will you provide your standard Sunrise pricing compared to GA, I think we should make those questions pretty direct. Please provide your standard Sunrise pricing. Please, perhaps just list the different ones that we want. So standard Sunrise pricing, standard general availability pricing, and then also premium pricing during each of those as well. I wouldn't ask them, will you? I go back to deposition training. If I ask that question, they'll answer yes or no, and I'll still have to ask the next question, which isn't part of our form. So I would just go ahead and ask them, please provide. And in answer to Jay Scott's comments, I'm right on board with you, except I think what we're trying to do, if we look back at the purpose and scope, was to obtain anecdotal evidence to facilitate our discussion, and in part it was because members of the PDP had expressed that registry operators might believe this, that, or the other thing, and so we were actually trying to reach out to them to get that anecdotal evidence as well as the actual data that we could utilize. So I think it is a dual purpose, and those leads to sort of open-ended questions, but I think that's what we were looking to do. Thanks.
Thanks, Michael. I hope you'll review this when we recirculate it to make sure that I captured your comments. Lori, please go ahead.
Yes, hi. I want to kind of dial back. I just heard what Michael said, and I've missed a few calls too, I think, the last month or so. But I am concerned about the focus on anecdotal evidence. This is something that INTA got slammed for, we had the low response rate, but I don't want to talk about that in this work group. I want to talk more about, in this sub-team, I want to talk more about, the way we got responses. We did have open-ended questions as part of the survey to ask whether or not trademark holders thought these mechanisms were helpful, and we got generally helpful answers. But then we got torn apart that wasn't data specific either. So I just want to dial, kind of revert back to our experience at INGA so we don't make the same mistakes, and then where we see strengths, promote strengths. But I kind of go with Jay Scott on this, that, we'll get all these anecdotes, but how do they get to the core question of effectiveness? And I think that's, to be honest, what I think we've been struggling with now for over a year. I feel like we've strayed into purpose rather than effectiveness in terms of, I don't know how to voice this accurately. And if I'm just trying to say that, I think that the target of the group should be something laser and data driven, and I don't know if anecdotes are really data driven, because let's say hypothetically we only get 50 responses, and we're going to run into the same problem of enough anecdotes to identify a trend. So I'd rather have yes or no's or straightforwards, which are really hard to do. I mean, I've been trying to think of what some of those questions would be myself, and I'm not sure. But I don't know, I feel like I wanted to give that caution, because to your point, Christine, we are going to be asking for, proprietary information strategy, and I don't know how forthcoming people will really be with that.
Yeah, thanks, Lori. I'll put my hand up to respond to that. I agree with you. I think in this specific question, I think it gets a little better when we get to questions 2 through. I hope it gets a little better when we get down to some of the other questions. Because this one really, like I said, it's not targeted at registry operators, so it's tough to get that data in this case. So I know that that's kind of why we had said, you know, obtain anecdotal evidence on this one. But I do support the suggestion that we need more than anecdotes, we need data. Also, now since you brought up the number 50, I mean, because just given the number of, you know, sort of portfolio TLD owners, like, I don't even think you get 50 responses. I don't think Donuts is going to respond 250 times. I'm pretty sure Amazon's not going to respond 52 times. So I think that ultimately at the end of the day, we're looking at, I mean, we got 3 responses to the first survey we put out, I think. So I think this is going to be really tricky, and I think that you're spot on in figuring out how do we get some information that people will actually give us that'll be actually useful. And I think that's tricky specifically when we want to ask, you know, sort of the question in the negative. Michael, you're next.
Well, I was just wondering in that, and I'm not a survey expert, but I know that there's a strategy in interrogation that's sort of referred to as softening, which is where you ask the softball questions, you get a conversation going, then you ask the hard questions. And by asking the softer questions ahead of time, whether or not you use the information from those has opened up the subject to providing that information. So what my suggestion would be to go ahead, and I don't know if we want to identify the quote-unquote soft portions of these, but my understanding is once we come up with these questions, we provide them to the entire group, they're approved or not, then they still have to go through the step of going through whoever we're utilizing to conduct the survey, to take a look at them. At that time, we can say, look, this is the information we want to get. These are the questions we came up with. Is this a useless sort of approach or not? But I agree. We need data, but in some cases, if we have anecdotal evidence, as Lori points out, maybe the response is the same one as some of the INTA responses received, which is, well, that's just anecdotal. But in effect, that anecdotal evidence was developed because we were facing anecdotal evidence contrary to it. So I think it's useful both from a question-asking strategy and, you know, also obtaining some of that information, some of that insight that we might gather and then be able to follow up if we want to as a PDP. So I agree, and at the same time, I think it is useful to have these questions at least appearing in this draft. Thanks.
Thanks, Michael. I'm going to defer to Mary next because I didn't notice her hand, and then Susan, if that's okay.
Thanks, Christine, and thanks, everybody. So as you said, Christine, for the first survey that we tried to do of registry operators, we did get just 3 responses, and that was despite numerous reminders and trying to enlist the help of registry state group members of this working group. Bearing that in mind, plus what Lori said about INTA's experience and some of the issues that were raised about that, at the same time, I just wanted to remind everybody that while we may be able to come up with draft questions as a sub-team that can be sent to the working group, we will have a professional survey designer on hand. So some of these questions and the context and the question of, you know, what is the best way to frame this? What should we be looking for? Is it better to ask a yes or no question if we want to have more responses? Is a conversation we can have with that professional. And the final point I wanted to raise at this juncture is that, as I think Phil and others may recall, when the council was discussing our data request, there was some concern expressed about the value of anecdotal evidence, particularly if it's limited, versus strict data, if I may call it such. But there was also a feeling that anecdotal evidence could be useful in some kind of qualitative sense. So I'm not an expert myself, but it may be helpful for this group to document some of the concerns as have been expressed on today's call and to be able to explain clearly to the professional when we get that professional what it is specifically that we're trying to elicit and for what purpose. Thanks, Christine.
Thanks a lot, Mary. Susan, go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Sorry, that took a bit to get off mute. I think everyone probably on here actually probably feels the same way as you do, Jay Scott. I think, you know, we all sort of slightly feel like we're working with what we've been given to work with. I mean, I personally, you know, feel that what we need is the data more than the anecdote. But I think, you know, we're also very conscious that we don't want to put out a survey that's only seeking data and we get absolutely nothing back, because we're very conscious that we've been tasked with trying to kind of make the best use of the ICANN funds if we go down this path, if you know what I mean. And I'm also really conscious that you know, we got the data request that went to the council and has then come to us to look at is one that says obtain anecdotal evidence to facilitate the working group review on charter question two. Now, I think I argued against this at length for the whole time that we had the previous data sub-team and indeed when it went to the working group. But I kind of also do feel like we've been handed something by the full working group that we're supposed to now put into practice. And so I'm really happy not to be seeking anecdotal evidence. I just feel like we've been tasked by the working group with doing it.
Thanks, Susan. Anyone else? Jay Scott, go ahead.
Yeah.
This is Jay Scott, for the record. Just to address Susan's concern, then maybe what we should do is go ahead through the exercise of doing that, but then when this is presented to the full working group, I think we should raise these concerns that once again and say, you know, again and again, these concerns kept coming up about the type of evidence we're gathering and what the usefulness of it would be and what the reality of actually receiving it might be.
Thanks, Jay Scott. I'm going to interject a suggestion here before I turn to Lori. I know I'm a big fan of these tables, but what if we were to actually create the suggested draft questions into two columns? Think about that for just a second here. What if we have a list of sort of anecdotal questions and then a list of data-driven questions? That way, when we do, to respond to Jay Scott's point, when we do present it to the working group, they can see the limited data-driven questions that are available versus the anecdotal questions. And it might actually really help us refine our thinking processes as we're looking at the anecdotal questions. It might drive us towards more data-driven questions. Lori, go ahead.
Hi, I support that suggestion, Christine. I think that makes a lot of sense, anecdote v. data. I think that would be super helpful rather than conflating the two. I also want to know what's been going on in the chat with Mary Wong. I've suggested that we reach out to the GDD staff because they have a lot more training and a lot of experience in doing these metrics on a frequent basis. And what I'm really concerned about is we're spending this amount of time. None of us are experts here. We do have some, you know, battle information from the recent survey that INTA did, and I do think it's valuable, but we definitely had lessons to learn there. And I just want to make sure that we're working most efficiently, particularly given the budget we're given, because the design itself could end up eating up a lot of that $50,000 before we even get to socializing it. You know, INTA had a built-in marketing way of doing things. We had a captured audience. We had our members. And so even though we had the low response rate, we actually had good means of marketing, and it was the survey design itself that led to the incomplete. And so this is why I'm hesitating, because unless we design this in a way that's very easy to fill out and not much time is consumed. I'm afraid we're going to go down that same path that we went through with INTA. And as background, we worked extensively with CCTRT teams. We took their model questions. We worked with Nielsen, but somewhere there was a disconnect in the design, and it was a serious flaw in the survey. And I just feel like I'm going to keep pushing this point, because if we don't have clear, direct, easy questions, we're not going to get what we need, and certainly not what we're going to get what we want.
Thanks, Laurie. I fully agree with you on a personal standpoint, and it looks like others do too. J. Scott, is that a new hand?
No, sorry. I'll take it down.
Oh, no worries. Well, we've got 10 minutes left. I'm not sure if we really want to dive into number two. I mean, we certainly can give it a quick look. I think that we've got some good direction, at least for, you know, switching up the table a little bit, splitting up the questions. I hope that we'll all do some homework and really review these and think about ways we could alter these questions. But let's dive in, I guess, and seeing no other objections. Oh, Kurt, go ahead.
No, I think that's right. Let's do question number two, and then in 30 seconds, I think this is the right path, that everybody's made a suggestion, so let's try to refine them the best they can. But then recognizing what Laurie just said, you know, the next step is to, you know, and do this, I'll get, you know, a survey provider in the room that's objective, that hasn't been part of this group, but also has, you know, registry operations experience that can refine the questions and create simple questions that, you know, registries or registrars or whoever our target is will answer. And in the last 10 seconds, I know we say the word budget a lot, but we really need to go about this the right way and then figure out what it's going to cost and, you know, try to do it as inexpensively as possible, but not, you know, not do something that's right because we're concerned about budget. So I think we're going down the right path, doing the best job we can refining the last column, but in parallel, we need to find the party that's going to, you know, translate these questions into the simple question that Lori is saying that we need and that we all agree with her.
Thanks, Kurt. Yeah, I think I support all of that. Moving on to row two. So we want to obtain anecdotal evidence to facilitate working group review of Sunrise Charter question number four, which is whether registry use of reserve names lists affects trademark holders' ability to participate in Sunrise. And to be clear, a reserve list is a name in which no one can register, a list of domain names no one can register at that point. So they're essentially blocked off from registration for one or more reasons. So we want to know four different things. Are the registry operator reserve names practices unfairly limiting participation in Sunrise by trademark holders? Should Section 1.3.3 of Specification 1 of the registry agreement to be modified to address these concerns? I think that goes to a recommendation of the working group. I'm not necessarily sure that's going to be something people are going to want to weigh in on, but anyway. Should registry operators be required to publish reserve names lists, and what are registry concerns that would be raised by that publication, or what problems would it solve? And should registries be required to provide trademark owners in the Trademark Clearinghouse notice and the opportunity to register the domain name should the registry release the domain names off of the reserve list subsequent to the Sunrise? What registry concerns would be raised by this requirement? And so one of the things that I did here was actually sort of kind of basically have one bullet point per question. So did you reserve domain names that you knew were trademarks? Right off, I mean, really that's asking the hard question. I think that Michael is, or someone was suggesting, just ask it right out, see what they say. If so, were those reserve names also dictionary words, giving them a chance, as I think someone else pointed, to raise a defense as to why they might have done that? Did you reserve names for political or legal reasons specific to your jurisdiction? If so, how did you select those terms? Are they blocked, or can the names be released to certain parties? How many names are in this category? And this one was specifically related to some of the geo names, TLDs. They ran into some problems. Cities wanted domains blocked, and the 100 that ICANN allocates wasn't enough. Would you support an ICANN policy, such as through a modification to section spec 1 of the registry agreement that required registry operators to publish their reserves names lists? Why or why not? Specifically, would such publication violate any local laws? And should domain names on the reserve list that match entries in the trademark clearinghouse be offered first to brand owners? Why or why not? Very open-ended questions. Again, very much opinion questions. Does not go to a lot of data except for, you know, did you reserve names that you knew were trademarks as a yes or no? Did you reserve names for political reasons, yes or no? Susan, you're first. Go ahead.
Yes, and thank you. And I was just going to take the opportunity to respond to the question that Phil raised when we were talking about this before, which is around the how would the, you know, should the domain names be offered first to brand owners? How would the registry operator know? And I think what that's the way that that would work in practice would be, I mean, registries obviously can know what's in TMCH because they can interrogate it, or at least they can receive SMD files from brand owners. So, I mean, in practice, one way that you might be able to offer reserve names when they come off a reserve list to brand owners would be if you ran some kind of a second sunrise. Alternatively, what we saw with the name collision names, for example, was that there wasn't exactly there wasn't as such a second sunrise, but name collision names, when they were taken off reservation, registry operators were meant to publicize when they were going to be released. And there was a period during which, you know, brand owners could say, hey, I've got an SMD file. Can I register the name? You know, so that's the kind of thing it's envisaging, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you, Susan. I think where we were thinking, because that's what's been done before, is sort of the batch release. I was trying not to limit it in this case, because in theory, if a registry operator was going to simply release a domain name for one reason or another, I think it's a bigger question and a problem, and I definitely think it's something registry operators would be concerned about, is if they want to just take one domain name off, they obviously wouldn't run a sunrise for that. So is there, you know, it's, I feel like the question the brand owners want to know is, can I be notified even if you release one? And the registry operators, because these questions are directed to registry operators, I feel like these questions would go to how does the registry operator feel about that type of request, trying to phrase it as neutrally as possible. So I think that, yes, in practice, Susan, what you're saying is what's been done, but I think that the point was to keep it a little bit more open-ended for the future.
Yes, sorry, can I just respond? And I think that's a really, in a way, that's a really valid question, isn't it? It's not even kind of how would you about it, but it's you know, is there, technically, can you do it? Because it's possible that technically you can't do it as a registry.
Yes, correct.
And so there's
right.
No,
hopefully,
there's
hopefully the open why or why not takes care of that, right? Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, well, conscious of the fact that we're now 3 minutes before the top of the hour, would anyone like to make any last-minute comments or suggestions about this list? Is this list of questions moving in a better direction than the first set? Is this list of questions suffering from many of the same problems? Mary, go ahead. I'm sorry, I'm not looking at the top part of the chat. Sorry. Go ahead, Mary.
Not at all, Christine, no problem. So just really quickly, staff did have a comment about the subpoint to the first question, and that was to recall that I think when this came up in context, I think it was the TMCH, there was some concern on the part of some working group members about using the phrase dictionary words. So what we're going to suggest is that we can go back to that discussion, we'll trace it and kind of see what that concern was, and maybe if there was some suggested alternative language for the phrase dictionary words, we can bring that back to this group. And secondly, on Susan's point, I think one observation that we had is that, you know, some of these questions may actually be questions to bring back to the working group as well, you know, particularly in terms of the, you know, should there be a second sunrise, that sort of thing. And even if the final question to the registry operators is more along a technical or feasibility line. And so we'll take note of that as well. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mary. And Susan, is that a new hand?
It is. Yeah, just on that dictionary word point, Mary, thanks for that. I think that actually the term we didn't like was generic term. Well, in fact, I know the term we didn't like was generic term. And I think where we came out was we felt that dictionary word was preferable. So I think it would be, in case I've got, you know, memory loss, it would definitely be really helpful if you would check that. But I think we actually ended up coming on feeling like the dictionary word was a more appropriate language, and we should avoid the word generic. But so thank you very much for offering to check.
Thanks, Susan. Thanks, everyone, for participating. I know people are jumping off. Steph, I'm assuming that you're going to be willing. I'm volunteering you to take the lead on taking the Google Doc and splitting the questions into anecdotal versus data-driven. If you wouldn't mind taking the first pass at that, and then maybe the group can go through and do our sorting after that. Should we send a doodle poll for agenda item 3? Yeah, I think we should. I think there was enough discussion on the list that we definitely are going to need a doodle poll for the next round of meetings. And Mary, do you have your hand up for something else as well?
I did, and just real quickly, staff is very happy to take the first pass at the division of anecdotal and data-driven. We are also happy to, you know, take a quick look through the Google document to make sure that, you know, updates a capture that was discussed today. What we did want to ask you and the sub-team was whether you'd like us to leave a couple of days for any additional updates, particularly, Christine, that you might want to make to this particular section before we go into the document.
I am personally made my inline updates as I went. I took all the notes right on the Google Doc. And so I'm comfortable with you just making the changes now. We'll all just pause for a day or two here while you do that. And then when you release it, we can all dive back in. That's going to be my suggestion. And I noticed in the chat that we agree we're not meeting next Friday. Thanks, everyone. Sorry to keep you long. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend, and happy Thanksgiving to those in the U.S. Bye-bye.
Ciao.
Thank you. Again, the meeting has been adjourned. Operator, please stop the recordings and disconnect all remaining lines. Enjoy the remainder of your day.